This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The next installment of American Experience on PBS is called Mr. Tornado. While profiling the life of famed scientist and severe weather researcher Ted Fujita, the film brings viewers through the 1974 super outbreak of tornadoes that devastated Xenia and hit Cincinnati's Sailor Park hard, too. Joining us now to talk about Mr. Tornado is writer, director, and producer Michael Rossi. Michael, welcome.
How you doing, Michael? Thanks so much for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. I always love watching American Experience. We feature the new episodes as frequently as we can, and I always learn something new from it. I'm actually embarrassed to talk about what I learned from this, and that's the term F-scale, which we know relates to tornadoes. We know it as the EF scale now, but the F stands for Fujita, as in Ted Fujita. So am I alone in that? Is Ted Fujita well known now, or am I making a mistake for not knowing who he was?
I don't think so. I mean, certainly I had the same sort of reaction when I started learning about Dr. Fujita's life, in that, of course, I'd heard the term Fujita scale, mostly heard F scale, always a quick reference when something happens, you know. In fact, even yesterday, or recently this week, there was an earthquake in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and of course the reference was the Richter scale. And I was discussing it with my wife, and I said, oh yeah, it was a 5.5. Immediate recognition as to kind of like the severity of the incident, right? So the same thing occurs, and that's certainly what I believe that at the time in the 70s, you know, there was the hurricane category scale, I think, was coming around as well. And so I think it was definitely on the mind of Fujita to come up with something that the public could latch onto, because he saw, you know, the seriousness of these storms, the unpredictability of them, and just some way to kind of demystify them as much as one scientist could, I think. And so by putting some sort of numerical measurement, or, you know, what he thought was serious data, you know, on these severe storms was helpful.
His life was fascinating. And right off the bat, you hit us really hard with the story that his life could have been taken when the bombs were dropped on Japan at the end of World War II. Tell our listeners a little bit about Ted Fujita in that moment, of what spared him, and then how that propelled him into this type of research.
You know, there's not a lot known about that period of his life. Okay, so he has this memoir that he published towards the end of his career, a few years before his death. And he has this very, very peculiar perspective, almost like a science paper of his life, where he attains to a lot of, you know, his researches and that sort of thing. But he does have some chapters on his personal life, and he kind of unveils this fact that he survived World War II and the devastating, you know, events up into that. You know, there's even a moment he was privy to the Tokyo firebombing, which was, you know, much more severe in a lot of ways to the citizens of Japan. And then, of course, he was just only 130 miles away from both the Hiroshima explosion and the detonation at Nagasaki. So he does reflect a little bit in his memoir about the kind of near miss, you know, and the kind of serendipity of his life. And, you know, it goes to show that there is this, there's something that people carry with them that not everyone sees, you know, in the same way that, you know, these invisible winds kind of surround us, yet we don't understand them. I think that everyone that we encounter, Fujita is a great example of that. You know, he had this under his skin. He used it, I think, as, you know, a fascinating kind of inspiration of his work, in that he really wanted to figure out why things occurred. I can't speculate beyond that what his emotional toll was, but certainly there is this undeniable coincidence and kind of like this fatalistic thing that occurred that brought him here to then study these very destructive forces that, you know, he was privy to at a very young age.
And the film explores some of his research into the devastation of those bombs that landed at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And one very interesting component that he learned, and I gather from the film, was able to apply to his research on the devastation of tornadoes, was how the impact of the bomb on trees was interesting to him. This was something that he picked up on. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. He was with one of the first teams, if not the first, of Japanese scientists that were sent in to see what the impact forces of this mysterious explosion were. Nobody knew really what had happened at the time. So in studying kind of the environmental impact of the what they determined was this elevated detonation, which in fact it was, you know, revealed years later that that's exactly what did happen, this downward force of energy and heat and air that then once it hit the ground, it kind of, you know, spread out and around the landscape. And this was kind of visualized by these knocked over trees. And he made kind of like, as he did with everything that he kind of witnessed and absorbed in his scientific research throughout his career and his life, he remembered this. It was a very distinctive pattern. He described it as a starburst pattern. So then decades later, when he's, you know, looking at the aerial destruction of some of the storms and tornadoes of the super outbreak in 1974, he sees similar patterns that don't look like tornado damage. And he said, again, a mental note. And then, of course, in 1975, just a year later after the outbreak, he researches the plane crash, the Eastern Airlines plane crash at JFK Airport, and he kind of connects the dots. And that's kind of, I think, it epitomizes his life work. It epitomizes how he has this retention for detail and almost like this, you know, random access memory, you know, that he just is always kind of correlating, always looking for patterns, always looking for significance in the smallest of details. And, of course, in this case, we're all lucky that he was able to retain that information and kind of fast forward it to this discovery in 1975.
And he was pretty well respected in the field of researching severe weather. And years later, when that Eastern Airlines crash happened at JFK, as you just noted, that your film explores a little bit that this was sort of his first brush with people pushing back against his conclusions. Can you talk about the way he reacted to that?
Sure. I mean, I think that he was someone in the field of, you know, meteorology, severe storm research, that was always kind of pushing the envelope. And, you know, Roger Wakamoto, who's interviewed in the film, you know, he touches on this and the fact that you need these types of people to push the line, continuously force those in the field, whatever the field may be, to think outside of their comfort zone and outside of the box. And that's what he was, you know, there's a line I write in there. He was kind of the idea man of the community, you know, in the 60s and 70s. He was willing to look at things so differently, and I think a lot of it comes from his non-traditional training. You know, he was not a traditionally trained meteorologist. He was an engineer. You know, he was very much inured by nature and wanted to look at things how he wanted to look at them. And then he just threw the ideas out there very quickly and, you know, in such a high volume that he himself was kind of this force in the field. So when the microburst discovery or announcement or theory came out, people just thought he was, it was such a far-fetched kind of invisible idea. They were like, there's no way that what you're saying is something that we have not sensed or discovered. And of course, you know, a lot of people ate, you know, sort of kind of ate crow a little bit afterwards when in fact he was able to measure it and show it and say, look, this is what I was talking about, you know.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking now with the writer, director, and producer of Mr. Tornado. It's the next installment of American Experience on PBS. It premieres Tuesday, May 19th, and it profiles the famed scientist and severe weather researcher Ted Fujita. Michael, I want to talk a little bit about your filmmaking process as it relates to this film. Can you talk about the accumulation of all that shocking archival footage, particularly from that 1974 super outbreak, which devastated parts of Southwest Ohio?
Sure. I mean, it was not an easy thing to kind of pull together. There, you know, at that time, there was a lot of Super 8, even 16 kind of home movies that were being captured, a lot of it in color. And, you know, there was a compilation film that we had found that was put together by some sort of government agency and that sort of thing. And, of course, working with Dr. Forbes, Greg Forbes, who is in the film and one of our advisors on the project, accessing some of Fujita's, you know, original research and some of the film reels that he had acquired when he was researching the storm. So it was kind of like, you know, this reverse forensic thing, research. But trying, of course, my rule number one in making these types of films is to try and get the original film and then, you know, retransfer that to whatever the highest quality resolution is at the time. In this case, you know, 2K, 4K, to try and get as pristine an image as possible. we work with a lot of film restorationists and that sort of thing, and film transfer houses. And, you know, just to, again, it's not going to convey, it's not going to come across what it's like. I've never lived through a tornado, but there's no way it's going to read the same way. So you try to create in a three-dimensional way, you know, using sound, obviously the tension of the story, and the pictures to try and to, you know, kind of harness whatever dramatic attention you can at the moment. And, you know, it's great to have footage. Sometimes you don't have it. But in this case, there was a lot that we were able to pull together. And, you know, hats off to my cohorts that worked with me, my producers and my editor for helping me put it all together.
I was surprised to see how much archival footage and apparently so much that was shot by witnesses rather than the news organizations. And we think today that just about anyone can film something that's happening at the moment because of our access to phone technology. But the technology was quite different back then. And I don't know if in your research you found what compelled people to try to get images of this monster that was approaching them.
You know, someone said something to me when I was, you know, a lot of contemplation about the significance of this iconic American storm and what it kind of means to Americans and our psyche. And somebody said something like, you know, you have to be careful when you witness a tornado because you're completely mesmerized by it, right? So there is kind of this thing that can happen to chasers or those kind of like that aren't, I don't think, equipped in the necessary safety, you know, lessons of how to kind of protect yourself from these things, but that you can kind of, you know, become awe-inspired by these things and forget to turn away when you have to. And that's obviously the danger of it. There's some beautiful contemporary footage in here from some of the, you know, I think some of the top cinematographers out there that are capturing these storms. And I do think that, you know, the camera technology was becoming more available for people to have these kind of home cameras. So, you know, it's instinctual. It's just like you would today. You run outside and say, hey, look, snap a picture, that sort of thing. You know, the first couple of shots of the film are contemporary footage of someone who did just that thing, you know, in recent times with his iPhone.
And Ted Fujita treated scenes like what the archival footage showed us that hit Xenia and Sailor Park and hit Louisville Hard 2 in 1974. He treated these scenes like crime scenes. Your film notes that human nature is to clean up a disaster as soon as it comes, but he wanted to leave them intact for research purposes. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, he knew it was very, very hard to actually witness and record the way you would want to as a scientist one of these storms. They're very wispy. They're very momentary. But what he did know is that the story and the evidence was left in its footprint, what he defined as a footprint, which was the damage. I mean, it was gold to him. And so he would go and he would, as quickly as possible, you know, he would jump in his Cessna airplane and fly to wherever the storms occurred and just painstakingly photograph and then go down on the ground and talk to people and interview them in so many different ways and in such a detailed fashion to try and preserve the moment that had passed. And that was really his only tool, his most valuable tool in trying to figure this out. You know, they call it kind of forensic meteorology, and he is kind of like one of the first forensic meteorologists. And, you know, it's this, he didn't witness a tornado until, you know, years later from a very far distance. And I think that, you know, the odds are that most people have not. So for him to kind of utilize that, to recognize that that was the key, and then for him to just have the imaginative skill to say, look at this damage pattern. I know what happened here. You know, he would just look at, you know, say a damage track in a cornfield or through a town, and then he would just three-dimensionalize it, four-dimensionalize it in his mind. And then he would quickly put it down on paper and talk about it at a conference, a seminar, and people would scratch their heads and say, how did you get that out of a cornfield? I don't get it. You know, so he was just kind of like very, very, very much on top of this just creative, you know, creativity. It was a huge part of transforming his data-driven mind to something that eventually we call the F-scale, that we all can kind of put a mental picture on.
You really wrap up the story nicely, naturally. Mr. Fujita died in 1998, and he did become ill, and you document in the film the way that he documented his symptoms and his levels of pain. He did it the same way that he documents severe weather.
Yeah, I mean, it's profound, right? He was a man who was interested in, I guess you could say, documenting. But I just, you know, I think it's just this instinct to understand, right? It's a very human instinct to want to understand yourself, the world around you, and how things work. And when you have such a kind of like high throttle, intellect, I think it makes perfect sense to me that, okay, well, I can't go out to these, you know, storm damage sites anymore, but there's something peculiar, something mysterious that's happening to me. I need to die. I need to figure it out. You know, I need to take control of that. It's a very type A kind of thing. Ultimately, it's something that we all struggle with.
Michael Rossi is the writer, director, and producer of Mr. Tornado. It's the next installment of American Experience on PBS. It premieres Tuesday, May 19th. Michael, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you, Michael. It was great.
Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director today is Rick Andress. And I am Michael Monks.